Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And we have one of my favorites. We have a repeat guest on. I love it when our guests have so much great information that we didn't get it all out the first time. And so we have to have them on again. And this guest, oh my gosh, I looked and Todd has not been on the program since January of 2019. There have been some little changes since then, right? We're going to have a good time talking about that. So please join me in welcoming back to the program, Todd Palmer. Welcome, Todd.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back. It's been too long.
It has been. We have to make sure that doesn't happen again. So let me tell people a little bit about you and then we'll dive into this. So Todd Palmer is a renowned thought leader, CEO, executive coach, and author who is committed to improving lives. As a successful entrepreneur and business owner, he works with both individuals and companies to support corporate growth, foster business startups, and guide leaders in the areas of talent management, workforce planning, and organizational development. As the CEO of a six-time Inc. 5000 company, and that might have actually changed since I did this bio. We'll have to find this out. Todd knows the struggles that businesses face around the areas of people, cash, strategy, and execution. Through his firm, Extraordinary Advisors, Todd is able to guide leaders into programs of sustained profitability. So again, Todd, welcome.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much. Your energy is infectious.
And yeah, as I said before the program, I haven't even had all my coffee yet. Can you imagine? You know, I really do just have one cup a day. Otherwise, yeah. So tell us, you know, it has been several years since we have chatted. Bring us up to speed as to what's been going on with you in those couple of years. And we'll really discuss COVID in depth, but yeah, let us know what's going on.
I'm happy to talk about that. So it impacted me like it did most entrepreneurs, so I can appreciate that. Gosh, since the last time we spoke, I've officially retired from my recruiting company, Diversified Industrial Staffing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fully devoted my time to my coaching practice, which I'm super excited about. COVID hit. Mm-hmm. I lost all of my stages.
I had six stages. Oh, yeah, because you're a professional speaker.
Right. So that was good. That's how we get the message out. We get in front of our audience to potentially find coaching clients and to be of service to others. Mm-hmm. And from that break point of losing all of my stages, I worked with, so I use a coach. I coach and I use a coach. Mm-hmm. So I think if I'm going to continue to help others, I need to enhance and sharpen my skills. And in talking with that coach, he's like, I think you need to decide that COVID has happened for you, not to you.
Right.
So we did a lot of mindset work around that. Mm-hmm. Since that point, April, May of last year, I spoke for free to 42 CEOs in 67 days.
Wow.
I was on virtual stages around the globe, as far away as Asia, Malaysia, China, India, from Detroit, where I live. And my practice has grown 400%.
Wow.
Yeah, never would have guessed that. And because I had more free time and I was on less airports, less planes, my book From Suck to Success, which went number one in February of 2021.
Nice.
And yeah, so it's been a crazy ride. And as we were kind of talking about, I'm now back traveling. I just spoke this past weekend in Florida of all places. So it was nice to get away and go down there. And next year, it looks like I've already got some opportunities to go out to Dubai of all places. So it's been really nice to watch the world come back. It's been super exciting for me to work with entrepreneurs and leaders to help them get unstuck, to help them do inside out leadership, to take them, their businesses and their families to create the lives by design they really seek. And so, yeah, I'm happy to be here today to talk about all that and anything else that piques your interest.
Great, great. I love it. Well, you know, I think COVID, you know, it's as you said, either it happens to you or, you know, it helps you. And, you know, and obviously there were lots of tragedies and we don't ever want to underlie any of that. But I think so many people did see it as for, you know, a way to make changes, especially CEOs, you know, and corporate leaders, because they were forced to pause. And, you know, and I think that was very interesting. I mean, like, you know, my husband went to work on a Friday and was told, you're not coming back in on Monday. Luckily, he brought his laptop home with him. Otherwise, there would have been, you know, some jiggling around on that. And he's worked in his office less than 10 days since then. Wow. You know, and that's been primarily because things like our Wi-Fi have been down. It was hard to work from home when you can't work. But, you know, and he works for a very, very large corporation. But it did, it made everybody pause and rethink their priorities. You know, I think that was probably one of the things that I've heard a lot of people talk about. So you work directly with CEOs. What have been some of the things that you have heard from them?
Oh, very similar stuff. I mean, me as a CEO, one thing I had to recognize and realize when I lost all of my opportunities is, why am I really coaching? Like, right. Why do I do this? And mm-hmm. I reflected back on the work I did with Simon Sinek, now going on 13 years ago, mm-hmm. where I worked on my why for 2 years to come mm-hmm. up with the two words, which are improve lives. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me, I can improve lives from anywhere.
Right.
I can improve lives from being on your show, mm-hmm. hopefully. I can improve lives from stage, certainly. Mm-hmm. I can improve lives from being virtual. I can mm-hmm. I can improve lives in the grocery store line. I can mm-hmm. talk. It's all about how I show up and how I choose mm-hmm. to participate. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of communication. One of the things I really noticed last year with leaders is they had a really hard time communicating, and they mm-hmm. struggled with that.
Right.
Because they, as leaders, they felt the pressure to mm-hmm. know all things to on all issues mm-hmm. at all times to all
right.
people.
Right. And it's not that they're micromanaging. No. You know, it was just they were used to being with everybody.
Yes. And then they had to pivot in. How do I communicate differently? And I was working mm-hmm. with a client, heart-centered leader, wonderful female CEO, mm-hmm. and she was really struggling. She was struggling because we got her on a very, especially when COVID hit and she had a manufacturing plant, sent everybody home. Mm-hmm. She was applying for all her you know, PPP, mm-hmm. EIDL loans, anything she could. And people were wanting to know how she was doing, where the business was going, what mm-hmm. could they expect? Because what I found psychologically is, in the absence of communication, anyone, whether it's your staff, whether it's your C-suite leaders, mm-hmm. whether it's your family, will, in the absence of communication, create their own narrative.
Right. They make it up.
and it typically is not in your favor, and it's typically not everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She was sending out a lot of emails because she thought that was the way she should do it. Because mm-hmm. yes, I'll communicate. Mm-hmm. Well, she wasn't getting any real engagement. So we pivoted into creating a video series where she would record a video every day, mm-hmm. and she would shoot it out to people via their mm-hmm. cell phones. She had everybody's number. It's a small company, about mm-hmm. 22 people. Mm-hmm. She was getting all this reactivity. They create a little group and everybody's sharing ideas and mm-hmm. people went over helping each other. And just because her intention was to communicate, mm-hmm. it's intention, not expectation. Mm-hmm. She's going to communicate. The delivery mechanism of email wasn't mm-hmm. landing with her people. She right. pivoted into going into video, mm-hmm. got engagement, got people connected, mm-hmm. and she was able to maintain her entire team. Everybody knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. And for her, the hardest thing to say was, I don't have the answers. Mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. when this is going to happen or when that's going to happen mm-hmm. or when we'll be back to work. Got her very much plugged into what I call her ATV, her mm-hmm. authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And she was able to show up as a brand new leader for those people. And now that they're back into mm-hmm. the facility, she feels that her team is even more connected. They know each other better, mm-hmm. even though they got dispersed.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. You know, and you know, several things in there. I mean, you know, we definitely know that nature abhors a vacuum, you know, and that's the whole communication thing, you know, and people, you know, they think, well, if we don't have anything to communicate, you know, why, you know, we're not going to communicate, or, you know, those things. And I remember, you know, one of the things that, you know, like through media training and crisis management and things like that, one of the best things that we always told people was to be able to say, I don't know, but I'll get you the answers. Right. You know, because that for one thing, it makes you human, you know, mm-hmm. and people are okay with their boss, with their CEO, with whoever saying, you know, we don't know, because that does make them human. You know, if you try to make it up, you know, that never goes well. And if you ignore it, it's as you said, people all of a sudden assume they're not responding because it's bad.
Right.
You know, and there was so much uncertainty. You know, I love the fact that they had said 2 weeks. It'll just take 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, have we hit that 2-week mark yet? And, you know, and I'm, you know, I actually think we've got probably another year before things have settled down to the point where we know what's going on, because we're going to have some more bumps and things along the road in a variety of ways. But, you know, I think one of the worst things that I keep hearing people say, and I laugh and cringe at the same time, is we can't wait for it to get back to normal.
Right.
That's not going to happen. So what do you tell people when they say that?
Well, great question. You know, the leaders who lament of wanting to go back to the old normal, of how things used to be. I use the comparison of music. You know, when I was a young man back 100 million years ago, I used to listen to music in my car, either with a cassette or an A-track. Or
we dialed that little thing.
Yeah. Now I carry, you know, I just looked at my Apple Music the other day. I have 1,400 songs in there on my phone.
Right.
I still listen to music. I listen to it differently. So it's getting them to wrap their brains around the old normal is not coming back. What's the new normal going to look like? And what impact can you have on that? How can you take certain things? Because certain jobs, if you really look at it, so my son's a CPA, best example I can give you. His job is measured on work performance created. What is his output? Not how many hours he took to do it, but what did he create?
Okay.
And he's been working from home and his employer wants him to come back into the office. He's 30 years old. He's like, I'm actually getting more done by working from home.
Right.
What are you going to measure me on? How do we measure it so it creates the greatest customer value, the best experience for our clients, versus this perception of control that a lot of leaders want to have, a lot of CEOs want to have, is, well, if I see you, I know you're working. Because there's old studies that show, and these old studies like are 3 years ago, talk about if you pay somebody for 8 hours a day, you be glad if you get 5 hours of work out of them.
Right. Because they're chatting, they're checking Facebook.
Internet surfing, you know, interrupting other people, you know, being the energy vampire in the office, going and just, you know, deleting the, you know, all those different things. So I think the new norm for people becomes, how do you measure the work you do? Going back to the why you do what you do. At a client I was working with in California, he was in the restaurant industry. They were shut down, clearly. And he was lamenting and he was stressed and he was frustrated. He had rent, he had staff, he had obligations. And we're talking about, take me back. Why did you get into the restaurant industry? And he's like, well, I'm a chef. And he was giving all the practical reasons, which are great. And I said, well, your restaurant was doing well at one point. It was a high-end restaurant, about, you know, anywhere, depending upon, you know, wine and alcohol, anywhere from a $250 to $400 average ticket per table. Not bad. I said, but why did you really get into it? Just put all this logic aside. And let's go to your heart. He's like, let me tell you why I got into this place. I remember when I was courting my wife, we could never find a good restaurant to go eat in it. And I wanted to create a great place for people to have a date. I said, hey, let's pay attention to that. We pivoted him out of it. He was able to get out of his lease, condense his space. He got a little 400 square foot pizza shop. And he started making gourmet pizzas. The average cost of the pie was between $45 and $65. That's expensive pie. It's San Francisco, so let's be very clear where it's at. But he stuck into, and he created all of his marketing and his messaging around a great at-home date experience. He did $3 million of pizza sales in 18 months.
Yeah.
Because he doubled down. So his new norm shifted. His space was still the same, creating a date experience through a restaurant experience, through food. The model is completely different. And actually, his margins are higher. He has less overhead. And he loves it because he's like, I don't have to deal with making sure I've got 30 people in my, I got five people. We're cranking it out. People come. I don't have any, you know, I got Uber. I got, you know, Uber Eats or DoorDash. I have no delivery people. He goes, my overhead, he goes, my margins are happy. I'm thrilled. And I couldn't be happier for him because he saw this as an opportunity to pivot out of things. Because he wasn't real super happy in the business he was in. He got for a lot of different reasons. But you know, he was able to pivot. So he was able to get where he wanted to go by doubling down on some of these things. So he doubled down on why he was doing it. He changed his communication model. He pivoted out of it. He didn't beat himself up over things he couldn't control, like a pandemic. And now he's doing great.
Right. You know, and I can, you know, only imagine that a big part of what was going on with him was the stress of managing all of that, you know, all of those employees, all of that. I mean, because that completely took him out of his passion. You know, he wasn't doing what he wanted to anymore. He was being the manager, the owner, you know, and that was all that he was doing.
Yeah. Most of us as entrepreneurs, I kid some of my clients that, you know, take me back to when you started. And a lot of them, once you really get them to be honest, mm-hmm. they really were building themselves a job.
Right.
They weren't trying to grow a business. And there's a big delta gap mm-hmm. in there. Some people are great at building a business mm-hmm. and some people are great at building a job, but mm-hmm. not everybody's great at both. Mm-hmm. And then as you see companies try to grow and scale, they get into these areas of cratering and death valleys. You mm-hmm. know, only about 5% of companies in America ever reach $1 million in revenue.
Right.
Then you go from a million to five and mm-hmm. five to 10 and 10 to 20. Mm-hmm. And everywhere there's these deltas where they're cratering. They're not growing. Mm-hmm. They're struggling. And they think, well, the people who helped me back in the day I started, and now I'm a $10 million company, they're going to be this, I should carry these people with me. Mm-hmm. Well, the skills required to build a $1 million mm-hmm. company versus to take it from one mm-hmm. to 10 are usually different.
Right.
The complexities, the levels, mm-hmm. the layers, the communication model, mm-hmm. they're often different. Mm-hmm. So if you're not upskilling yourself as a CEO, and that's why people hire a coach, they mm-hmm. need to upskill themselves. Mm-hmm. They realize what started me here isn't going to get me there. Mm-hmm. I need that outside person, someone who's been there, done mm-hmm. that, and a lot of cases survived the right. mistakes like I did. Mm-hmm. And that's where we come in. So I think it's important for people in your audience to understand that what you did isn't going to necessarily get you there. Mm-hmm. And trying to go back to the old norm is pretty mm-hmm. much impossible because mm-hmm. there's a new norm that exists.
Right. You know, it's funny that you talk about coaches needing coaches. Just yesterday, I saw a meme that somebody posted and it said, even doctors have doctors.
Right.
And you know, right. and that's the thing. I mean, we can't treat ourselves. You know,
we shouldn't treat ourselves.
We can go to Dr. Google and you know, and we can look up some things, but you know, I'm not going to go to YouTube to learn how to do surgery on myself. You know, and I think that's one of the things that is so important is hiring a coach. And that is, you know, a lot of what you do because you know, we get caught in the weeds. You know, we only see what's going on with us. And a coach has the experience of dealing with a lot of other people, you know, and seeing, okay, well, this worked for this person. Then, you know, what about if you do this? And all of those various things. Plus, you know, when we do get caught in our head, we get caught in our head, right? You know, there's that loop that is in there. And, you know, maybe it's I have to provide for my family and my employees. I have to do this. I have to do that. And all of those things just, you know, the coach gets you out of that and, you know, and able to see, okay, yes, you still, those things still exist, but.
Right. Well, I always say people don't have to really do anything. You right. get to do a lot of
right.
those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of it's, you know, as I talk about it in my book, you know, it's a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. Mm-hmm. It's intention, not expectation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I opened the book talking about my biggest failures. Mm-hmm. And I was the CEO of a company who was doing $2 million a year. Mm-hmm. And I was $600,000 in debt mm-hmm. after 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to crash the business. The bank was calling the note. My mm-hmm. son and I were going to be homeless. Mm-hmm. It's not a good feeling.
No.
I call it the itty bitty shitty committee. Mm-hmm. My the voices of the
demons. Oh yeah, those voices were just beating you up.
And I had 600,000 of them. I mean, the mm-hmm. arena was full mm-hmm. at capacity. Mm-hmm. And my coach came in and it got me unstuck, mm-hmm. got me out of my own way. But mm-hmm. I went with a coach who'd grown businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I always tell people, it's like it's great to have someone who understands theory. But if mm-hmm. you've actually got someone who's played the game, so
right.
to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's why I tell people, like the worst day of my life has become my mess marketing message. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And, you know, then we turned the business around, mm-hmm. got financial literacy, which I needed, mm-hmm. changed the way we hired. We went from hiring from resume to hiring for DNA, not mm-hmm. resume, and grew the business to an 5,000 mm-hmm. 6-time company.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bumps in the road there. Mm-hmm. People love, like, it's kind of the rock star. Oh, you won the fight. You made the ink 6 mm-hmm. times. That was a byproduct.
Right. That shouldn't be a goal.
It was a symptom mm-hmm. of I had to get my butt out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get mm-hmm. out of debt and I had to grow that business. I did. Right. I had debtors to satisfy, mm-hmm. Banks, et cetera. And for someone to consider hiring a coach, one, I had to be ready. I had rock mm-hmm. bottom. I called my entrepreneur rock bottom.
Right.
The bank did accelerate that process. Like, hey, by the way, we're going to take all your stuff and
yeah,
your house.
Yeah, oh, you're bottom now.
Yeah, I guess I'm in trouble now.
Mm-hmm.
So getting through that part, but also recognizing I was ready to be coached. Mm-hmm. I was ready to change
right.
is important. My mm-hmm. level of self-awareness was growing. Mm-hmm. I was realizing that my imposter syndrome was pretty loud,
mm-hmm.
but I also realized that there had to be a better way.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I didn't know that. So I used one coach for 7 years and I've had another coach in my life since then. Mm-hmm. So I could upskill my game. Mm-hmm. I'm probably never going to be without a coach. I mean, hey. I don't know if you can see in the pictures behind me, but I'm a big kind of a baseball fan. Mm-hmm. So I still play baseball. Mm-hmm. I have a swing coach for my game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I can look at successful athletes and other successful, I mean, mm-hmm. if Denzel Washington can have an acting mm-hmm. coach, I can certainly have a coach mm-hmm. for my business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I mean, athletes are a great example of that. The greatest athletes in the world still have coaches. They still have people who work with them on specific things. I mean, you know, Tiger Woods would be probably a great example of that. He was having a little trouble with his swing. Now, there were obviously a variety of reasons for that, not the least of which was, you know, some pretty big physical reasons. But, you know, he hired someone to help him through that, you know, and I mean, it's going to be obviously very interesting to see how he's able to come back from the accident. But, you know, he is, you know, now he's back to some of the basic levels, physical therapy. Right. I mean, you know, some of those things. And I think that's maybe one of the things that many business owners, especially small business owners who think they have to be all to everyone, you know, they think we can't admit that we need help. And, and everybody needs help.
Yeah. And the reason they don't get the help is because of pride and ego.
Right.
It's just, and that was what held me back.
I'm supposed to be so smart. I started my own business. You know.
And look at how smart I am. I'm still in business. Mm-hmm. You know, during the pandemic, I was working with a lot of my clients whose businesses were shut down. Mm-hmm. And they would bring that manic energy, that mm-hmm. crazy behavior, mm-hmm. the chasing the abundance, chasing the bright and shiny, mm-hmm. they'd bring it home. Mm-hmm. Well, where were they going to manifest it?
Right.
Where were they going to?
Their dogs are going, whoa.
or they're driving their family, you know, mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those situations where, you know, there's a lot of internal pressure mm-hmm. an entrepreneur will put on themselves to mm-hmm. perform. And there's also a lot of directing of maybe some not so healthy behavior patterns. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at the behavior of an entrepreneur, you look at the behavior of an alcoholic, they're often very mm-hmm. similar.
Very similar.
We will sacrifice mm-hmm. our families for the rush of the high of mm-hmm. the sale or mm-hmm. the alcohol or the drug. Mm-hmm. And watching people in those tough times where they were condensed, they couldn't go to their go-to mm-hmm. drug of choice, which a lot of people is entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. What were they going to do? Because they still mm-hmm. had to live life. They mm-hmm. still had to get through it. And then they had to deal with themselves first mm-hmm. and others had to deal with them. It was a fascinating time that we'll probably never see again. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a lot of healing, hopefully, that takes out of that. Mm-hmm. But I also think you're going to see a lot of people from the pandemic and these entrepreneurs who were the serial entrepreneurs who were never satisfied. Mm-hmm. Divorce is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Rehab is going to, you know, they're mm-hmm. going to go up. All those mm-hmm. things are going to happen because they didn't have a place to push mm-hmm. that energy, a place to push that mindset.
Right.
Because pride and ego was so much in their mm-hmm. driver's seat. Everybody's mm-hmm. got pride and ego on some mm-hmm. level. It's just like imposter syndrome. But mm-hmm. if we let the pride and ego, you know, think about your life like a car. If mm-hmm. you let pride and ego or imposter syndrome in your driver's seat and you're in the mm-hmm. passenger seat, mm-hmm. it's controlling you. You're not controlling
it. Mm-hmm.
Through a lot of techniques and a lot of the coaching that I do, mm-hmm. we get people to switch seats. Sit in the driver's seat because the pride and ego is still going to be there.
Mm-hmm. And it should be. I mean, you know, it plays an important role.
Absolutely. Not everybody. I love that you get that. Not everybody gets that. It does play an important role because mm-hmm. at times through our history of life, it's kept us safe.
Right.
You know, that mm-hmm. it don't put your finger in the light socket is a good message. Look mm-hmm. both ways yeah. crossing the street is mm-hmm. a good message. Mm-hmm. But going deeper into debt like I did when you don't have the money to pay for it, mm-hmm. not such a good message.
Yeah.
Just to prove mm-hmm. how right I was. Mm-hmm. And so many people get wrapped up in proving how right that I am, mm-hmm. how smart I am. And I know more than you, let me prove it. But mm-hmm. really, that's all veneer for their fears and insecurities.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and you said a key word several times, and that's control. Mm-hmm. You know, for so many people, and I don't care if, you know, they're the one person business or the 20,000 person business, all of a sudden they lost control. You know, we did not know what was going to happen. We didn't know, you know, how long things were going to be shut down. We didn't know what it was going to be like when employees came. We didn't know if our employees would even come back. I mean, you know, and that's obviously something that many businesses are still struggling with, you know, that their employees either, you know, are happy being home for a variety of reasons, or, you know, they found something else, you know, which, you know, maybe that was okay. But yeah, I mean, they're struggling. And so they have lost the control. And for many people, they started a business because they wanted that control. They didn't want to be right. the one being bossed around, you know, all those various things. So when they lost that control, that was very hard for people. And like you said, that's where destructive behavior came out of it, you know, and whether it was with their family or trying to micromanage their employees with, you know, I'm sorry, you were, I mean, you know, I remember, you know, some of the things that I saw were, you know, people, you know, putting the things counting keyboard strokes on their employees' computers who were at home. And I told one person who was considering doing that, I said, so you just don't trust your employees.
Right.
And I said, did you trust them in the office? Well, yeah. I said, so, you know, and if you didn't trust them in the office, then they should be gone. I mean, you know, that's just right. the thing. And so if you trusted them in the office, trust them at home, and they probably will be better employees because they're not commuting. You know, they're not having all of that stress. They're not going to the water cooler and talking to everybody. You know, they're not being the disruptor. So trust them now. And, you know, and I think that's been one of the, like I said, one of the harder things for people to accept is that control has changed is maybe the best way to put it.
Well, you know, if you take a look at Google's doing a lot of work around this right now called a psychologically safe work environment.
Mm-hmm.
If we create a psychologically safe work environment, we have measures in place where people are seen, heard, known, and accepted. And we see, hear them, know them, and accept them. They're going to be who they are.
Right.
They're going to do the work we need done. And by giving them a voice, you know, millennials are famously known for wanting to work in teams, wanting to have freedom and flexibility, and have a voice in the room around big decisions. No, they can't make the decision, but they want their feelings heard. You give people that space, what you're going to do is you're going to create that psychologically safe environment. And people know they can't get that everywhere, so they're not going to create a situation, by and large, you're going to have the outliers, but by and large, where they're going to be terminated or they're going to go look for another job. And the speech I just gave in Florida on Saturday was to a group of old line manufacturing. And I said to them, you know, same thing I'll share with with your audience today is, the number one reason people quit a job isn't money, isn't drive distance. It's us as leaders. It's the first line leader. And you also know, so not only are you losing the great employee you've got, but you're also going to lose all great future employees because the best source of your great future employees are your current employees.
Right.
So if you have a great place to work, you treat people well, they perform, they're going to want their friends to be there because by and large, they're going to like the work they do.
Right. And they're going to say, hey, come here too.
Right. Versus, you know, these guys goes, well, you know, I don't want to pay $15 an hour. I should pay them 12 and they should earn those other $3. Like, yeah, they're not coming to work for you. So if three slides I dropped in to prove my point, well, I want to pay them $12 an hour to go work in manufacturing. It's hot. It's nasty. It's hard physical labor work. Here's the alternative where your entry-level people are going. They're going to Costco for $16.50 an hour. They're going to, there's a picture of a guy I found on Amazon. The Amazon's feed on Twitter. He's got blue hair. He's making $15 an hour and his benefits are 100% employer paid.
Wow.
Or then go to Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A pays you $16.50 an hour.
And they send you to school.
They send you to school. You don't work Sunday. So if you like your football, even better. And you get free Chick-fil-A. I mean,
it's not bad.
Or I can come work at your place and get yelled at by some guy who's bitter about, no, you got to, we have to, as employers, to bring in these people, we have to recruit differently and we have to become an employer of choice.
Right. You know, and I think now more than ever, we're seeing that employees really do have a lot of choices as to where to go. Because, you know, companies, I mean, they did furlough, they laid off, you know, people, you know, all sorts of things. But so they're looking for those extras, you know, like a lot of the work from home. I mean, when we switch back to hybrid, that's going to be very interesting. But you mentioned your son. I think a lot of people are figuring out, okay, as long as I get the work done, does it matter if I'm working at 11 o'clock at night or 11 in the morning? You know, and so having now, you know, obviously there are times where you have to be online, maybe for team meetings, things like that. But yeah, I mean, if you are one of those people who is a night owl or early morning or whatever, you know, working weekends, I mean, you know, you might want to have Tuesday, Wednesday off because that's when your kids have softball or whatever.
Perfect. Yes, exactly.
And, you know, and so we're finding that when we're empowering, you know, there's that word, when we're empowering our employees, then it's better. Now, obviously, it is different with companies where you have to be there, like a manufacturing company.
Right.
But there are still things that you can adjust to say, okay, can we make this better for you? And because they had to during the pandemic, so why not carry some of that forward?
No, that makes complete sense. And the reality is this. This is what they call a candidate-controlled marketplace. Mm-hmm. It's not employer-controlled. It's candidate-controlled. There are a lot of data points out there, and one of the data points that really makes people uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but it's true, is we have the lowest labor participation rate in over 52 years. Mm-hmm. So there are less people working. That's mm-hmm. the first part. Secondly, unemployment numbers, if you look at that data point, which is I argue is very skewed, so I always mm-hmm. go to labor participation first. Mm-hmm. But if you just look at unemployment for the sake of conversation, mm-hmm. we're at full employment already in the United States. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the subcategory of millennials. Mm-hmm. They're at 11.5% unemployment. Mm-hmm. So if you thought your baby boomers were going to leave and you're going to bring in your millennials and they're mm-hmm. going to replace, it's not working.
Right. Millennials went, ooh, I can do my own thing.
Right. I can freelance. I can gig economy, this thing. Mm-hmm. I can do some different things. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, where this all leaves us is that there are 7 million more jobs than there are people for them in mm-hmm. the United States.
Right.
So walking around thinking employees should be blessed to be in your presence mm-hmm. and they should bow down to you mm-hmm. as the owner or the mm-hmm. plant manager, that is not going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. You know, I love it when people, you know, say bad things about millennials, you know, but I'm like, hello, we raised them.
You know? Right. Yeah.
You know, they have those views, but you know, the things that millennials want, I think a lot of us baby boomers want too, but we never thought we could ask for it. You know, and so, but yeah, I mean, it really is an interesting time. It's kind of like, you know, it's the whole home market, you know, things are selling for way more than what they did even a year ago, you know, employees can ask for a lot more now, you know, and especially yeah. depending on the job, you know, they can say, I'm only going to work 4 days a week, but I promise you, you'll get 10 hours from me on those days.
Right.
Yeah. You know, or I'm not coming in. I mean, you know, there are so many people now who went, I love working from home. I'm getting the work done. You know, so why do I have to go back to an office? I think that's going to be one of the challenges.
It's so funny. Yeah, it's so funny you say that about the millennials and the baby boomers and the disconnect. What I've seen is you got the millennials saying to the baby boomers who now have grandkids, produced by the millennial, uh-huh. saying, hey, can you come over and see the kids this weekend? Mm-hmm. I've got to work. Mm-hmm. Millennials are saying, oh, no, you choose to work. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, just tell your boss you're not coming in. Mm-hmm. Because this is the days you can see the grandkids. Grandkids mm-hmm. trump. I mean, anybody's mm-hmm. got grandkids?
Oh, yes. Grandkids trump. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's shifting things. So mm-hmm. usually we're so used to the parent teaching the child. Mm-hmm. Well, now the children are pushing back mm-hmm. saying, that's your choice. Don't right. act like you're a victim, mom or dad. Mm-hmm. Come see the grandkids. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, I can't staff my weekend shift because mm-hmm. you know nobody wants to work overtime. Mm-hmm. Oh, now you dig a little mm-hmm. deeper. Why is that pendulum mm-hmm. swung the other way? It's mm-hmm. actually being driven by the millennials mm-hmm. who are the parents of the grandkids.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And you know, and other things. I mean, they're telling him, why aren't you asking for this? Why aren't you doing right. that? You know, I one of the big things that is, of course, very important to millennials is that, you know, companies give back and mm-hmm. and are philanthropic and community minded. And I mean, that's a fabulous thing, you know, and so when companies are having to add that in as a benefit, you know, and it's funny, years ago, I worked for a very, very large corporation in Denver. It was about the ninth largest corporation in the world. And we had a huge philanthropic program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and at that point, about $1 million budget. I mean, and this wow. is 20 years ago. I mean, this was big time. And that was just in Denver. Our budget was just for our Denver site. And we very much used that as part of our recruiting. You know, we told people this is what we do. You know, if you want to be, it was an insurance company. And so a lot of those people were very mathematically minded. And so many of them were math tutors, you know, and we allowed that. It was like, okay, every other Wednesday, you can go off to this middle school and be a math tutor. And we had people who were attached to those kids forever. You know, they bonded with them, you know, all sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, we really did recognize even back then that our employees cared about what we were doing in the community. And so not only was it, you know, recruiting tool, it also banked us that good feeling in the community. You know, people knew, okay, this is a great corporation. You know, they've done good things. So, you know, if and when bad things happen, we kind of had that good bankability. But, sure, you know, sure. I remember I asked my CEO one time, I said, you know, and I was in charge of the budget. So that was, you know, that was fun. I love that part. But I asked him, why do you do this? And he said, we do it because everybody we're helping are future employees, future people who could be doing business with us, future shareholders. And sure. He said, and that was why we do this. And, you know, and I think that's something that many companies don't recognize is, you know, and it doesn't have to cost money. I mean, you know, maybe you go and you know, do a Habitat for Humanity house, or, you know, one of the things that we did a lot of with that company was we had a lot of people who traveled. And so we said, bring back the little shampoo, all of those things. And we took them to shelters. That cost nothing, but sure. You know, it was a great thing to do. And so there's so many things that companies can do. Now, obviously it is a little bit more difficult with everybody working remotely, but you can still figure things out.
Yeah. Well, here's what I hear often is the massive amount of intentionality around that. Mm-hmm. We want to give back. I've never heard of the math tutor one or the shampoo one, but they all go into giving back to our community, giving back to our, so there are shareholders in a company for sure, but there's also stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And if you take care of the stakeholders, they are your best sales force.
Right.
They tell everybody, hey, this is a great place to work. You should buy their products and services, things like that. So it's that intentionality around things versus saying, well, we're only going to do one program per year, and this is what we're going to do, and leave it that way. I think there's
and it matches our corporate mission.
Yeah, it matches our corporate mission, and so we're gonna throw a golf tournament, and we're gonna have a bunch of you know stuffed shirts out there, and we're gonna give the money to you know to a charity that you know if you take a look at a lot of charities around who spend 95% of their money on administration and 5% back to the charity.
Right.
I love that hands-on approach, that impact in the community, that legacy. That it sounds like I love the story about the tutors. Like if they're still you're impacting kids, and a lot of kids don't maybe have the ideal parental home or the parents who have the time and availability that a tutor can provide to them. And just those little conversations and the fact that someone gave to that young person, who knows what that person can do? Those are the young person's going
to
impact. I mean,
they might turn out to be the president of a company, the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? You know, or they might just be the greatest person at Chick-fil-A you've ever seen. You
know? Right. Nothing wrong with either any of those. Mm-hmm. It's someone, but someone cared about me. Mm-hmm. Someone took time out of their day. And the company saying, we'll pay you to go do that. Mm-hmm. Go do that. Mm-hmm. That's a huge wake behind the boat of that company.
Right. You know, and now I think there's probably a need even more so for some of those things. You know, I keep hearing, I don't have kids, and, you know, but I still read, you know, and so one of the things that we keep seeing reports of over and over again is there are many kids who will never get caught back up. You know, with the year of homeschooling, for many reasons, they're just not going to get caught back up. You know, and so if you have a company that has a way to be a tutor, you know, or help these kids, why not do it? You know, yes, there are altruistic methods, but it also makes you feel good. You know, and you know, and it makes your employees feel good. You know, they spend an hour tutoring somebody on an English paper. Great.
Well, there's always opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it certainly makes sense that some people will think that the best way I can impact someone is giving up the dollar. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Right.
If we give of our time, that's how I look at it. I can always go make more money. Mm-hmm. I can't make more time.
Right.
Time is finite. Mm-hmm. So if I give you my time, then I think I'm giving you my greatest gift. From our time together, who knows what conversations we'll have. Mm-hmm. From our time together, who knows what ideas we'll create. Mm-hmm. From our time together, who knows what generative questions I'll ask you to help you maybe create something brand new that you never even thought of versus just writing a check.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause writing the check is easy. And, you know, I've worked for nonprofits. We need the money. I mean, you know,
it's not but, either or, it's and both. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And being able to do things, you know, and I think that's one of the things that we discovered, you know, with our employees many years ago was many of them couldn't write the checks, but they could go be the tutor. They could bring shampoo in. I mean, you know, there were so many other things that they could do that, you know, and that was one of our goals was, you know, how can we make this something that all of our employees can do? You know, and I think that was, you know, and again, it was, it did it take a little coordination? Sure. But, sure. You know, it was obviously worth it in the long run.
Well, the interesting thing about that too, is you can certainly probably come up with stories of the impact, you know, it's created. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guarantee you there's stories that you've never heard, mm-hmm. and the impact is even deeper.
Right.
It's funny when, like, going back to speaking from stage, they always say, well, how do you know your audience liked you? You can get your Q scores, you can get your different mm-hmm. ratings and all that kind of stuff. I said, if I had a conversation with one person, mm-hmm. or I said something that stuck with someone and they went home and made it a different change or a different impact, mm-hmm. then my time was well spent. Mm-hmm. I don't show up to speak from stage to get, I need to have clients. I need to have guarantee this. I need mm-hmm. to have a guarantee. I show up. And if I do my best and if something lands with somebody, mm-hmm. it's so powerful because that I had to switch for me from expectation to intention. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. I just thought of this. I was taught that by a 9-year-old boy. I had to give a speech in Toronto. Mm-hmm. The family came because it was supposed mm-hmm. to be for entrepreneurs, and they opened it up to the world. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to say to these kids? I'm freaking out. My imposter syndrome is screaming at me. And so I gave my speech. I modified it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I had a little boy come up to me. His name is mm-hmm. Alec. I actually put him in my book. Mm-hmm. And he drew this diagram of 13 F's equals S. So I kept saying fail forward because I mm-hmm. wanted to kind of make it not mm-hmm. just entrepreneurial or money driven mm-hmm. or success driven for business. Mm-hmm. How can it land for anybody? Mm-hmm. So this little boy comes up to me, wanted to meet me. You know, like, it's always nice when people want to meet you after the mm-hmm. speech. And he said, Mr. Todd, I really appreciate you coming a long way from Detroit to Toronto mm-hmm. to give this speech. He goes, I've learned I'm never, ever going to fail because I'm never going to do something 13 times. That's crazy. Who does something 13 right. times and fails? Mm-hmm. He goes, the close of the speech was mm-hmm. every time you know, failure is something as a word we've assigned to an experience. It's not really true. Mm-hmm. It's a definition we've assigned mm-hmm. to an experience. So if you just assign a new definition of remove failing and replace it with learning mm-hmm. and learn and learn and learn, mm-hmm. you'll never be failing. Mm-hmm. And he gives him this big hug. His mom got all emotional.
Oh, I guess yeah. Oh my gosh. She did good.
Oh yeah. She did good. And she's like, we've been having some struggles. He's not really focusing. He thinks, mm-hmm. you know, he just talks negatively about us. This is awesome. I'm so glad we brought him. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward, COVID hits. I'm feeling mm-hmm. a little bit sorry for myself. Mm-hmm. And I you know, the mom wanted to be my Facebook friend. So I said, hey, mm-hmm. I'm writing my book. The book's really for entrepreneurs. Would you mind if I included our, I saw it as mm-hmm. our story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's mm-hmm. like, absolutely. And I had a picture. I took a picture of the little mm-hmm. boy. I said, can I put that in the book? She's absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've gotten more goodwill from that mm-hmm. young man who mm-hmm. I wasn't sure I could impact. He's mm-hmm. impacted me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. that, I don't know. I think there's just so much opportunity available when we go in with a great mm-hmm. intention to mm-hmm. impact others.
Right. You know, and I think one of the things is that we always have to remember, and, you know, we've kind of been alluding to this, is we always have to be learning, you know, and mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what we do. You know, we always should be learning, you know, and you know, even from just the simple little things. I mean, you know, I would have been just absolutely blown away, first of all, that a 9-year-old was brave enough to even come up and speak. And
right,
you know, and,
exactly.
And then be, you know, so cool about it. But yeah, I mean, it just, we all, but you know, how many people, first of all, wouldn't have even stopped to have talked to people after a presentation? You know, they're busy, you know, they're doing their book signing, right? You know, they're at that back table, they're making that extra money. You know, and so we miss those chances to learn. I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, improving the lives of others and where you can do it. And it's everywhere. I mean, you know, yeah, we can learn exactly. from the people in the grocery store line. We can learn, you know, from places I think that are unexpected is maybe that, you know, we're not thinking that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to learn. And, you know, it might just be that you learn a new funny joke, but it also might be that you learn, you know, oh my gosh, I need to slow down. I need to, you know, sure. I need to do this, you know, and just be open to all of those things as opposed to being so caught up in our head. And again, I think that's maybe where the pandemic has made us stop and pause and really be thinking about, what is it that we're doing with our lives?
For me, it has. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of my clients, it has mm-hmm. because go, go, go mm-hmm. is rewarded.
Right.
To be able to tell your friends how busy you are is applauded.
Right. To be a workaholic is almost a badge of honor.
For sure. For sure. It's been really interesting. I have a friend of mine. He does online sales. And his business was really hampered in the beginning by COVID because what he was selling different he used to sell products and services that nobody was buying at the time. And he just sat down one day and really started thinking about what are people going to do now that they're home? And he pivoted into like 10 categories. And his two biggest sellers were, of all things, puzzles and sidewalks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I fell into that. Yep.
And he's telling me the story and how he'd get these notes from people and they build these puzzles. And he was so insightful. He's like, I'm glad my business is able to survive because I was creative about it. And he and I talked multiple times. We got him unstuck about some things. He goes, it's kind of cool to see people like sitting down generationally around the kitchen table, build a puzzle.
Right.
Or to have the kids go out and do sidewalk chalk with grandma versus everything being on devices, everything being on your tablets, everything being through technology. Technology is great, but anything to excess we're become bloated with it.
Right.
I really think there's a lot of truth in what you said.
Right. You know, and I think it was a good thing in many ways that everybody was forced back into their homes. Exactly what you were saying. You know, we had to spend time with people that, you know, maybe we've gotten into the habit of you saw them for dinner and maybe a couple hours of TV and that was it. And even at watching TV, they had their phones. I'm just as guilty of that as anybody else.
Sure.
You know, I live at the end of a cul-de-sac and, I'm in Atlanta, so temperatures got warm here, fairly quickly. And so probably by about April of last year, we started getting together out on Saturdays with everybody, we socially distanced, we did all of those things. But, part of it was we needed to see other people and talk to other people. But we really got to know our neighbors by doing that.
Yeah.
We
did the same thing. Yeah.
And even those that didn't join us were still invited. And it's funny because I've been thinking we need to do that again. We got out of that. We got busy. Things opened back up. I love that phrase. And so we stopped doing, and I think we need to start doing that again, and just getting together and, having a drink on a Saturday afternoon and talking about how your weeks went.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that piece. What comes up for me is the word reconnection. I was doing a lot virtually. And in my rider, I had two types of pricing. One for virtual and one for in-person, right. Right? Because I'm away from my family. I'm traveling.
Right. It's going to cost
extra
more.
Extra expense for that. It just costs more. It's going to cost more. I had people literally saying, we will pay you more, but we want you to come in the night. Can you come in the night before? Because we're going to do a dinner.
Okay.
And we're going to have you speak in the middle of the day. And we want you to be part of it because we want our associations or our organizations to have a greater connection. And we think you can be part of that. We'd love to.
Right.
We'll pay for an extra. We'll pay for extra. I'm like, wow, before people
were
like, how can we get it cheaper? How can we? Now they're like, yeah, we're willing to be more flexible because of that loss of connection. And in that space of the distancing or the loss of that connection is, like you talked about earlier, the vacuums, the isolation, the loneliness that creates. And it's certainly lonely in the human space. It's lonely as a leader. It's lonely at the top. There's truth in that. And if there's ways that we can create that connectivity, if there's ways that we can create that sense of community. I don't want to say family necessarily, but you could. Then I think what we're able to do is I'm hoping coming out of this situation, people have a greater appreciation for that. I think a lot of us lost that. And now that we have that, let's not lose it again. Let's be cognizant of that. Because like I said earlier, I have two beliefs. One are the time is finite and our energy is one of our most renewable resource. And if we're giving someone our time and our energy and we're fully present for them, certainly we can do that on technology. You and I are doing that right now.
Right.
But if we're doing that in person and we feel that energy from another human being, and we're able to help them be seen, heard, known, and accepted, we're giving them such a gift that has been absent because of the pandemic.
Right. I think one of the things that people have really made big adjustments with is time. For one thing, for the most part, didn't have commutes. You know, my husband used to drive 45 minutes on a good day each way. He had to drive right by the main home of Home Depot. And boy, you timed that one wrong. And you know, you're there for a long time. We all of a sudden got that time back. Now some people, many people use that time productively. They listen to podcasts. It was their quiet time. I mean, I had one person who told me that she misses that so much. I'm like, you miss driving in traffic. And she said, ugh, I don't care about that. She said, that was my only quiet time where it was just me. And she said, so I've started going for drives. And I'm like, okay, but we've figured out our time differently. I have not been to an in-person networking event since February of 2020.
Oh, wow.
Not sure I'm going to go back to them. And part of that is the time factor. It's not just that you're there for an hour. It's the preparation time. I tell people, oh my gosh, I have to put shoes on. There's that, there's the commute. There is obviously some cost, whether you're paying or, all sorts of things. There's the time at the event. Then there's, the reverse time of all of that. And, one of the things that I have thought of is I haven't done any of that. Has my business suffered? No. Have I missed seeing those people? Most definitely. I mean, I really miss seeing those people. But from a business perspective, it hasn't hurt me at all because I sat down and thought, okay, if I would have done 3 hours going to, whatever meeting today, then I'm going to spend 3 hours online networking, I'm going to attend a webinar. I'm going to spend time on LinkedIn, all those various things. And that has been so much more beneficial than those other things that, that I think is what I'll continue. Now, will I go back to some in-person stuff? Yes, but not nearly as much as what I used to.
Well, and I can appreciate where you're coming from. My business has grown 400% from online stuff. And when I talked to someone asked me the other day, like, hey, you talked to those 42 CEOs in 67 days, how many became clients? I said, zero.
Right.
Like, really? Yeah, but they became like, I have 42 salespeople now that I didn't have to pay.
And who said, oh my gosh, you need to talk to this guy.
Exactly, for sure. And what I have figured, so I've been doing some more live appearances and live events and some different works with boards. And what I'm finding is really unique is the fluff. There's been much less fluff conversation, which has been really refreshing. Right. I love generative conversation. I love it when I can ask you a question of how are you? And you really tell me, hey, I'm not so good versus we're great. Everything's great.
Right.
Everything's not great. And so for me, I've really noticed that. And the other thing and I've seen stories in the news that contradict this statement, but I've honestly seen a lot of kindness from people. I've seen a lot of kindness, even like on planes, people are just kinder in some respect. Certainly I've seen people get antsy in a hurry. Yeah.
But they probably were anyway. I mean,
they probably, right. They're going to be that way anyway. But I've just seen a real level of almost like a genuine appreciation for the ability to go and do things and to sit and connect. And certainly, on planes, we're wearing our masks and that's the way it's going to be. And that's okay. But just people little courtesies and little thoughtfulness, it matters.
We
are.
Yeah. We're thinking about those people. I shared with you before the program that I had just last weekend, I went to Minneapolis for a family wedding. So Friday, it's early morning flight. I mean, we left the house here at 5:30 to get to the airport. So, it was early, early. And, and I had a window seat. So that way I was a little bit more protected because I do have some health issues. But this was the first time I had flown where my husband wasn't next to me. So I was going to sit next to a total stranger. Sure. Now, the plane was 100% full. I mean, they had a standby list. I'm thinking 7 o'clock in the morning to Minneapolis. Okay. But so this gentleman and his sister, he was very, he pointed out, this is my sister. And, he was 70s, somewhere around there. And he sits down, he's got his bag of his breakfast food. And he sits down this is my sister. Now, he didn't introduce himself. It was just kind of, but he tells me, he said, I have my breakfast here. I've had my shots. He said, but if you are more comfortable with me not taking my mask off, I won't eat my breakfast.
There you go.
And I said, oh my gosh, you know, I said, please enjoy your breakfast. I said, you know, I said, I've had my shots. Obviously I will keep my mask on, but thank you so much for asking. And I mean, that just blew me away I really don't know what he would have said if I said, no, don't eat your breakfast, dude. But, I just was totally blown away by the fact that that was his first concern was me. And he knew nothing about me. And I think you're right. I think, you know, we hear about the nasty ickies, but there's so much more where people are like, hey, what can I do to help?
Right. And that renews my faith in people. Mm-hmm. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, when you were telling your story, the thing that came up for me was he wanted you to be seen and heard. He was like, you're mm-hmm. my traveling companion for these few hours. Mm-hmm. I want to see you. I want to mm-hmm. honor you. And I want to have, versus me assuming mm-hmm. and having there, you know, there's mm-hmm. awkward tension in the air mm-hmm. potentially. So I give mm-hmm. him a lot of credit. It was very, very insightful on his part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was so sweet, you know, and he enjoyed his breakfast and I hadn't had breakfast. So all it did was make me hungry, but yeah, I mean, it really was the sweetest thing. And so I think that's, you know, I think that really is something as we've been saying that has come out of this is we are for the most part. And I hope this continues, you know, when we get back to normal, you know, which that, you know, we've said that's not happening. I hope that we continue to be thinking about that, even if it's just, you know, hey, you know, I've watched you on the last couple of Zooms, you know, you haven't quite seemed, you know, maybe, you know, that's one of the things people said is, you know, they're starting to notice people are a little disheveled, you know, in the background, things might not, you know, and you know, is that a sign that there are some issues or, oh my gosh, I just caught you too early. You know, things like that. And so I think that's, you know, we do need to be more concerned about people and, you know, and let's just keep carrying that forward.
Well, I notice most of my client calls are on Zoom. I don't do mm-hmm. a whole lot in person. And, you know, I've found it's becoming quite a skill to be able to read people mm-hmm. on Zoom because they can, you know, smile.
Right. You don't have much body language.
Right. You know, you're kind of squared off and, mm-hmm. you know, the energy could be different. And mm-hmm. so as a coach, it becomes very important to me because my mm-hmm. job is to read the room. Mm-hmm. My job is to ask the questions mm-hmm. to help you get unstuck around what you mm-hmm. want to accomplish. And so I really hate doing that on the phone because mm-hmm. I had one client said, are you making coffee? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, are you listening? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mirror back to me what I just said. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't. I'm like, you're paying for this.
Right.
Like, dude, mm-hmm. you're, like, you're not going to get the value out of this. So, like, mm-hmm. we only do Zoom calls. That's it, or we're done. Mm-hmm. So, oh, okay. Well, that's, mm-hmm. and he's gotten a lot of value out of it. So, mm-hmm. the value we can have again, it gets people just really need that time to be seen and heard. Mm-hmm. And when we see and hear them, a lot of magic can happen. Mm-hmm. Defenses come down, mm-hmm. resentments go away. Walls come down, mm-hmm. Hearts open up. But when we just pretend like mm-hmm. I don't see you and I don't hear you, mm-hmm. a lot of damage can occur as
right.
well.
Right. You know, and I think that has been one of the benefits of, you know, the conversations like we're having, you know, with, you know, maybe one-on-one or even small group on Zooms, you know, when you're in an office, that almost immediately has its own set of rules as to what you can say, what you can't say. You know, when you've walked into the CEO's office and, you know, you're in your little chair and, you know, the CEO's up there, I mean, you're not going to say things, but when you're on a Zoom call and you can tell that, okay, you know, they're in their kitchen, their kids wandering around behind them. There's a different level of intimacy and great CEOs are really learning how to use that to their advantage. You know, they're noticing they're, you know, they maybe never would have said, hey, Todd, tell me about your kid. I see you've got this picture behind you, you know, or whatever. Sure. And, you know, and so it comes back to exactly what we were talking about at the very start, communication. You know, it really is about how, you know, how great CEOs just have to make sure that they're communicating with their employees the best possible way.
I think great CEOs are the leaders. You know, Jim Collins talked about it in Good to Great, the level five leaders. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the level five leaders are very much about others, not about themselves. Mm-hmm. So when I ask you a question about the painting behind you mm-hmm. or the microphone behind you, or the, mm-hmm. what it looks like to be like a little bear underneath the microphone, mm-hmm. there's a story probably to all that. Mm-hmm, I mean, we mm-hmm. surround ourselves with our stories and our mm-hmm. stuff. And if someone tells you a story and you get to know mm-hmm. them a little bit better, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, you know that. Oh, then, mm-hmm. like, so I played baseball last mm-hmm. night. you talk to baseball players and you find out how many of the same things, you know, guys who you just see in uniforms, mm-hmm. like are these successful CEOs, mm-hmm. these architects, all these, and the guy who you know, works at the grocery store, mm-hmm. All brings everybody together. But mm-hmm. we all break down those walls mm-hmm. through communication. So it can be done in a million different mm-hmm. ways. And I'm really glad and thankful for the opportunity to be on your mm-hmm. show today for us to communicate.
Right, right. Yeah, because it's so much fun. And we definitely have to do it more than every 3 years, you know? Because you do have such great information. But tell us, you know, tell us how people connect with you, how they get your information, and what services you provide.
Well, so the best way for people to connect to me, well, first I want to give them a gift. So if you're interested in anything we've talked about, go to my website from mm-hmm. sucktosuccess.com mm-hmm. and download a free chapter of my book. That'd Perfect. Be my gift to you. Mm-hmm. Just mention to me that you heard me on Deb's mm-hmm. show. If someone's really a big fan, you can reach out to me on my email, todd@extraordinaryadvisors.com, and I'm happy to set up one of those free calls like mm-hmm. I did with all those CEOs from around the world mm-hmm. last year. And ultimately, you know, what I'm spending 90% of my time doing right now is going around and working with companies, working mm-hmm. with CEOs, helping mm-hmm. them get unstuck, inside out leadership, creating their mm-hmm. lives by design, mm-hmm. and then working with boards in associations, doing the same thing. Because mm-hmm. a lot of them are trying to get new direction, mm-hmm. where they're going to go. What does it look like going forward? How can mm-hmm. we do things so that, you know, ultimately the legacy I leave by being on this planet is I've improved lives, which mm-hmm. is my reason to be here.
Mm-hmm. Right. I love it. I love it. Well, Todd, as I said, we have to do this more often than every 3 years because you do have such great insight and such great information. You know, your website is extraordinaryadvisors.com or sucktosuccess.com.
It's actually from to success.
Okay, see, I wrote it down wrong. So there we go. Okay, got that right. So, you know, and you know, on your websites, you've got great information. So I encourage people to see that. You know, and really connect with you and, you know, share those insights. Because, you know, as we said, you know, we're learning and we need to continue learning all along and we never know who we're going to learn from. And so, you know, I'm just blessed to be able to have learned from you today.
And I'm blessed to have been on your show. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Deb.
Great. Well, do you have any final thoughts for everyone?
You know, I think for people, what the pandemic taught me, in many other things that have happened in the last 3 years since we've met, is if we can pivot our mindset that something is happening for us, mm-hmm. not to us, we mm-hmm. will literally, my coach tells me this all the time, we're literally using a different part of our brain. Mm-hmm. My coach is Danny Freeland. Mm-hmm. He's a neuroscientist, he's literally a medical doctor who understands and can tell you why your brain does what mm-hmm. it does. Mm-hmm. And when we just pivot that one thing from it's happening for us, not to us, mm-hmm. we're using the higher cerebral cortex part of our brain mm-hmm. versus the amygdala, which is the reptilian fight or flight part of our mm-hmm. brain. We can just start changing things mm-hmm. that are happening for us, not to us. The change, I can speak from experience, the changes in my life have been immense mm-hmm. and incredibly positive.
Great. I love it. I love it. Well, I'm Deb Greer. I've been having such a great conversation with Todd Palmer. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.